Mr. Higson, Reel 5. Before we go on, I'd just like to ask one question. I noticed from the newspaper cuttings you showed me that you heard some singing from on board the Lancaster. Was that when you were in the water? Could you tell me just exactly what you heard and where were you?
In the water, yeah. I remember particularly the roll out of the battle. And then later, as the ship was going down, it was by with me.
And where was the singing coming from?
It was coming from the... all the people who couldn't swim sat on top of the ship as it went down. And they were the people who were singing. The people still on the ship couldn't get off, couldn't swim. No alternative, they just sat there and went down with the ship.
Right, and the next thing is, you've got you to Crown Hill Barracks. Now, what exactly happened at Crown? That's at Plymouth, isn't it?
At Plymouth.
What exactly happened there?
They, as I say, they didn't let us land until it got dark. And then we were put on buses and take to Crown Hill Barracks. We had a drink and a sandwich. We bedded down for the night. And the next day, they kitted us out with new uniforms. Shoes, underwear, uniforms, nothing counts. And we was put on a train and we came up to Sheffield.
And what state were you in yourself?
All right, after a night's sleep and a breakfast, we was making business.
Did you realise what a disaster it had been? I mean, sometimes you can be in a big thing and not realise how big it is.
No, we didn't realise the depth of it.
So what happened when you got to Sheffield?
We got to Sheffield, it would be maybe twilight anyway. And the difficulty they got in Sheffield was finding billets for us. There was no sort of barracks to put us in. And we was marching around town well past midnight, and we were dropping two or three of them for, all in private houses, silly billets. So, had a chap named Corporal Dring with me, and we were dropped off at, I still remember it, 43 Main Road, Darnell, and the people's name was Clayton. I did pop in after the war to see them, but unfortunately they'd gone on holiday, so we never did meet again. But it was 443 Main Road, Darnell. We stayed with them for another 3 weeks, I think.
They treat you well?
They treat us very well. They took us bowling with them, went to the local bowling arena. And the only thing all to do there, we did have an air raid one night, and they looked up as gone out a little bit because Corporal Dring myself refused to get out of bed. We've seen it all before. We stayed in where we were. Because they went down to the shelter.
Were you doing anything military there while you were there? No,
we did nothing military at all. I'm trying to think where we went to next from there. We went down to the Drayton near Norwich. And we were billeted in Drayton Hall. At that time, I don't know what it's like now, it was a very, very tiny village green. There was a canal and a bridge. Dive off the bridge. And there was a little pub on the village green. Mackerson's Stout was sixpence a bottle. And we spent many hours in that little pub at sixpence a bottle.
Was it just a draft of you, or had you joined the unit then?
We joined the First Fifth Foresters then. And that was the...
They were in the Drayton area, were they?
The territorial unit, yes. And
which company were you in at that stage?
I was in A Company, yeah. 7 Platoon, A Company.
And you were a corporal, or lance corporal?
I was a lance corporal at the time, yes. And
what were the unit doing?
They were doing military training, but the military training, please remember, they were a territorial unit. And the adjutant had come up from Regimental Sergeant Major. I've never forgotten it. Take my drift. And we spent most of our time not on the square, we didn't have one, but on the football field, marching in fours and in battalions and in companies, and we went back to the 1914 war again. At that point, we'd not been issued with any equipment, with no weapons. All we got, we stood up in. And quite honestly, that's all we could do, drill. And it was quite a while before we got re-equipped with weapons. We were still dominated by this feeling of we've got to be drilled into units, and we was even marching in battalions, doing right forms, all the rest of it, up to battalion strength, which in this or that day and age really was a little bit stupid. But that's the way things were, and that's the way things have to be. It was an eye opener, really. But I suppose it was an eye opener for the village, because looking back, there couldn't have been more than 30 houses in the old district, and to be descended upon by a full battalion of troops, it must have been quite traumatic for them. I know the pub ran dry at time too. By and large, it was okay, and we moved after a little while. And there was another big house in between Drayton and Norwich, and I can't remember the name of it. But this was a grander setup altogether. It had got a swimming pool, plenty of gardens, and we didn't receive weapons, chiefly Bren guns and the Lee Enfield. Some of them had got their own American, the P-50s, is it? It wasn't the Lee Enfield, it was an American one. But it was probably the same ammunition as ours with them. The only difficulty was they're different sizes, which made difficulty in presenting arms and sloping arms, which was in great demand there. Yeah, and it was there that we was visited by His Majesty King Gilbert.
What do you remember of that? What do you remember of that visit?
Not a lot, because that day I was only corporal, and it was my job to get the ladders down there onto the football field, and somewhere among my souvenirs I've got a photograph of him. And as I say, being the chappy around the room, and I wasn't on it, but I remember it quite well. He came, and I did see him, and I was surprised how small he was and how face to face he was. What he'd been promoted up, and I don't know for the cameras, but he didn't look very good at all. I mean, this would be 1942, and he didn't. 1941, because we'd already been to Drayton, or moved to the second one.
So how long were you at Drayton?
We'd be at Drayton 18 months. It'd be 18 months altogether. So it'd be the end of 1941 when they came to see us.
And you were just all that time doing drill training and
training.
Were there any coastal defence or anti-parachutist duties?
Yes, we did move from there into the district around Cromer.
What? And then back to Drayton?
Back to Drayton.
And what were you doing at Cromer?
It was mostly sea defences. We didn't lay the mines, we plotted them, and the REs laid the mines around Cromer, but we was putting the guard on. We put in the guard on Cromer in that area, and we did have little spots where we could get through the minefield into the sea, and have a swim in the sea, and most particularly it was, because there were no swimming costumes, and in the mine area the local people went around in, so it was off to the uniform and into the sea. Great weather. The officers were they wore the same costume, didn't they? Yeah. And then we went back to Drayton. And from Drayton.
What about anti-parachutist work, patrolling the countryside? Any of that?
Not at the moment. No, we didn't get that in Norwich. But.
So the Drayton time was a very quiet. You've not got much to say about that, in a sense.
To say, well, it was a quiet, very quiet time. We didn't get much field training at all. We did plenty of marching, plenty of route marching, and plenty of drilling, but we didn't get much field training. And from there we went down into Kent.
And when was that?
That was in the end of 41, towards the end of 41. And
right.
We stayed.
Whereabouts in Kent?
Romney, near Romney, which is towards Folkestone. And we did command near the Light Railway. This Light Railway, which run from Romney, I had been to it, and I had been to it. And we did have that for our use. And we did have a long little carriage with a Brendan set on it. Not good in white and no. But it was handy for moving the troops, because we had a detachment at Dungeness Point. We had one in New Romney. And Sandwich, is it Sandwich, where the airfield is? We had one platoon up near there, near Sandwich. So there was plenty of movement in
Did you rotate around these detachments, and I mean, did they change?
We did, because personally I spent quite a lot of time in New Romney, and then I went down to Dungeness. And Dungeness Point, where we finally got a two-pounder, and we got that right on the point of Dungeness. And we had the lighthouse for the lookout post. Most weird, because you don't know if you've been to Dungeness, you know sand, it's all pebbles. And in the quiet of the night, the sea comes and it moves the pebbles. And it sounded very much like marching feet coming along. Everybody's on tenterhooks and thinking this is a night. But we had a peculiar system of defence. Two men on the gun chained at 2 hour intervals.
This is a 2 pound anti-tank gun.
We had a line from there, a wire line, which came from the gun up to the first billet, which rattled the tin with pebbles in. So we had to give it a tug and wake us up, and we could arouse the rest of the people. But we did start to do some field training.
What sort of things?
Fire movement and working with the REs, and we also communicated with the RAF. I'm getting quite a lot of integrated work.
What sort of thing with the RAF?
They was working with us more as the spotters. Of course, we didn't get the old dogfight over there at that time. The biggest dogfights were already gone in 1940, end of 40. But we didn't get the occasional dogfight seen from there. But chiefly, naval patrolling, and our headquarters was in touch all the while to get reports. And they checked around the beach and all that. Yeah. And we did spend quite a lot of time in Kent.
Had you had any special training as an individual? I mean, what were you specialising in? Or
not at that moment. Might have not come to that. It was during this time that my mum took seriously ill. And we moved to Penkridge in Staffordshire.
What, the family did?
No.
The unit?
The unit moved to Penkridge. And I asked to see the CO, and I got a 48-hour pass from him. and she was, she had cancer, and she was really ill, and the doctor said, "Now, don't be surprised if we send for you quickly." And it had been about another 3 weeks. We'd been out on the once, and I got back and said, "The CEO wants to see you." And he had a telegram saying that she was really on the way. And General Lilly, he's very good, Dominic, he said, "Now, I've got your train ticket, catch the train. When you get to Derby, it's going to be late." He gave me a phone number and said, "Now, bring that chap and he'll take you home to Orchestra." We got to Derby, there was another lad named Morley Brown. And we got to Derby about midnight and we decided not to worry anybody, we'd walk home. So we walked 8-9 miles from Derby. It didn't mean anything. But unfortunately, I was too late. My mum had died at the time. So I rang the colonel next morning and they said, "When is the funeral?" I said, "I'll tell you later today." So when the arrangement been made, he said, "Well, ring me back as soon as you make the arrangement and we'll see what we can do." So I did. He said, "Well, stay at home until after the funeral, but you must rejoin the unit the day after." So I thought, "Well, very, very good on him." And I did that. I'll continue the story because it's all part of it. A couple of days later, they asked me to go to the order room. And they said, "I realise that you've had a bit of a tottering time. I'm sending you on a course, get you away from us for a while." And they sent me to Western Command. Western Command Weapon Training School was at Alt Car near Liverpool.
At where?
Altcar. Alt Car near Liverpool. And that is the first time really I came into contact with Ben Mon warfare.
Tell me what they taught you.
They taught me how to build readouts for grenade throwing, how to use grenades, the various types of grenades. They taught me fire movement. They taught me the North Over projector.
What was that?
That was a curious arrangement for throwing bottles filled with petrol, which has got salt inside, which exploded on impact. They taught me the Piat mortar, which was a tank busting machine. And now this must come into it because this comes in the latest story. They taught me the spigot mortar, which was a home guard machine, which weighed about 300 weight and would throw a 12 pound bomb anywhere up to 400 yards.
How did it work?
It worked like any mortar does, only this was an horizontal one and not a vertical one. Instead of having a tube to put the bomb in, in the tail pin of the bomb was a 1-inch tube with a charge right at the top end underneath the bomb case. And instead of going in the barrel, that little tube went on a spigot. That's the reason they called it a spigot mortar. Right down to the bottom. The spigot would be about 18 inches long. But you did fire it manually. Now when it fired, they said you fired a 12 pound bomb and it would whip away like lightning. I'll tell you the story of this because this followed later on, but if I don't tell you that, I'll probably forget it. It would be later on when I was at the battle training school, I got a call to see the CO, and it was the middle of the night. And they said, "They tell me that you're an expert on the spigot mortar." I said, "Well, I've certainly used it, so I don't know much about it." Right, he said, "I want you to be on parade tomorrow with one of these things." I said, "We don't have one, so we don't use them. So the best place you can get one from is the Orange Guard." Right, we'll arrange that. And next day, down at Beechborough in Kent, we set this thing up on, it'd be like a football field. And crowding around was generals, lieutenant generals, brigadiers, the IAF, couple from the Navy and Army who have come to see this thing fired. But I'm overrunning the story because the CO said, I understand if a fire at aircraft. I said, I don't know where you got the information from, sir, but it's an anti-tank weapon. No. So he goes back through the papers and he said, well, it says here that you can use it for aircraft. I said, can I have a look? So he said, yeah. And what it said was you could use it for aircraft training. Now, some bright whizzle have found out that the bomb travelled at 240 miles an hour. And that was about the speed of the then aircraft. And he said, if you tie a 20-yard piece of scrim on the end, sorry, 20-foot piece of scrim on the end, and fire it, the speed and the shape would be like an aircraft. You wouldn't get the bend on the time of gravity. And that's what it was all about. And so, anyway, we went through the demonstration, and one of the generals said, excuse me, Sergeant, he says, is that all we use it for? I said, no, sir, this is an anti-tank weapon. He said, well, could we have a demonstration? He said, could you hit that tree over there? Yeah, no problem. So I got the lad to set it up and aim at the tree, and we did. Full phase tree. Of course, he was only using concrete bombs, of course. And off it went at a tangent. 2 minutes later, the general's batman came back and up. Excuse me, he said, but something's damaged your car. And it was a bomb which had ricocheted and hit the general's car. Oh, never mind that, man. He said, never mind that. We've seen what it can do now. And that was one of the lighter moments of battlefield training.
What did you think of the spigot mortar?
Not a lot.
Why not? What was wrong with it?
Weight, for one thing. Weight. And it didn't collapse. You had to dismantle it and rebuild it every time you used it. Got four big legs, and then the spigot. And it's a bomb of the top part of the field. The actual spigot weighed between 3 and 4 inches weight. So you can see you've got to have a 1500 weight truck to carry things around.
What about that? Can we look at the others? The Piet. How did that work? What do you remember of that?
The Piet fired a similar bomb to the spigot mortar, but it's a smaller one. And the charge was so placed in it that all the blast was forward. And the idea was, with the Piet, was for the front end to pierce the armour before the main charge exploded. They were ripping a big piece out of the tank. But we didn't use that.
How was it fired?
Fired from the shoulder.
What propelled it?
It was an Anatol charge, and it gave a mighty kick. It was a two-man weapon. The chap who fired it and the chap who loaded it and carried the ammunition. I don't know the weight of the pit, but it was quite considerable. So he wanted two men to want to carry the bombs or want to carry the pit. And although we took it and we had it in North Africa, we never fired it.
What about the North Over projector? How did that work?
The North Over projector, we never took that normal because that was relegated in the end to the home dollar. I mean, in action, you can't carry bottles of petrol around really, really with any safety. So the North Over projector. It did what it said, it projected projectiles, but the projectiles were glass bottles with, what's the thing on matches? It strikes when you... there's a name for it. And a piece of this was dropped inside the bottom screw down tight. It ignites when it meets air. And, of course, you can't carry them into action, really, can you? They're more for a static ambush type
weapon. And what grenades were you introduced to? What grenades?
Sorry, the Mills bomb chiefly, and the Makelaar, the stun grenade. We use those a lot, the stun grenade. But the battle school, again, I was a battle school instructor.
Now, that this is keeping to when you were on the course. You were at the Western Command School first, at Aldcor. The tactics you were taught, how sophisticated were they? The firing movement?
Pretty good, pretty solid, the firing movement. Yeah, and we were taught all the weapons which were then modern. An added job we had to do there was Saturday afternoon and Sunday. We had to teach the old guards from the Liverpool area, Liverpool and Cheshire area. They'd come to us over the weekend and we'd take them down on the beach and explain the gun gun, and then on the tripod, arcs of fire movement, and what the gun could be used for, aircraft as well as the field of fire. And we taught them the range of the Mills bomb, how to throw it, standing position, sitting position, or kneeling position, lying position. We taught them how to build readout for throwing. And we didn't have a stun grenade at that time.
So you were teaching them what you were taught, basically?
We were teaching them, we were passing on the information.
Almost straight away?
Straight away.
And what did you think of the Home Guard? What were they, a mixture of young and old?
They were a mixture of young and old, yes. The chief thing there, the difference, we were early 20s and we'd been trained hard, and we got a little bit more points, and we had to modify ourselves and realise that these were people probably in the 40s, 45s, maybe 50s, or the younger ones who had not yet been called up. So we had to modify our way of life to suit them. It worked, didn't it?
Some of them must have been First World War veterans and knew a fair bit themselves.
Yeah, but again, we didn't want that, did we? We're moving away from the Fifth. This has been the battle all the while. We're moving away from the First World War. Chances and whatnot. I enjoyed it. They were good. And I think we sent them home on the Sunday night feeling that they'd learnt a little bit more. They learnt a little bit more how to look after themselves.
Anything else you did at Altcor?
I got shot.
How did that happen?
We had a red rifle range, and we had quite an elaborate way of checking fire onto the target, and we also experimented with different types of ammunition. And this day, I was down in the books, your paper, same as you've got, and the telephone, and checking how many shots we got on the target from various ranges, using men gun or rifles, and relying me. And we was also experimenting with some new coated ammunition. And it was one of these that one of these rounds, which must have hit one of the supports, and it came back and hit me.
Where did it hit you?
In the right arm. I still got, and I had 21 stitches in there. It plowed in, and it finished up underneath the elbow there.
So from the wrist to the elbow?
From the wrist to the elbow. And the officer in charge stopped firing, and they says, "Carry on." So, "You're all right." He said, "We've got about 20 minutes." He said, "Carry on, I'm all right." And after the firing ceased, they took me to Ormskirk Hospital.